You know, the way the markets are trading this week, traders seem to be sending the message that more bushels are being added by way of increased yield than the number of bushels being committed to exports by way of big-time sales to China.
Live from the land where exports just don't seem to matter, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. We didn't even plan that, did we, brother? Thinking
no.
With the same brain again. Here we go.
Yeah, man.
This afternoon, we've got Sue Martin from Ag and Investment Services. And right after the news, Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, the other half of my brain, Chip Flory.
All right, man. Yeah.
Roomies
now.
Roommates inside the same head. How did you ever think that you would sink so low?
I didn't know that it would be so roomy in there. That's what kills me.
Spacious.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. What a beautiful day.
Gorgeous.
What a beautiful day. Yeah. Yes. Up here in Northeast Iowa, it is absolutely incredible. And then when you call up the radar and you see how much rain is falling across, you know, parts of southern Nebraska, but you get into the eastern half of Kansas, some scattered showers in Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio. There's some good moisture falling on a lot of corn and soybeans today.
Good.
And as a result, we have these huge export sales that were announced this morning on a weekly basis for soybeans and on a daily basis for corn. And here we are stuck in this tug of war between, are we adding bushels or are we net reducing bushels by way of these big new crop sales? It's a tough, tough situation. We'll see if we can get some clarity on all of that from Sue Martin coming up here later in the show. You know what? There's quite a bit of news. Why don't we go ahead and get right into it?
Let's do. Well, export sales of wheat in the weekend of July 23 totaled nearly 677,000 metric tons. That was just above the highest pre-report trade guess. It was a diverse group of buyers, with the Philippines topping the list that also included Taiwan, Brazil, Mexico, and Japan. The lack of follow-through buying from yesterday's solid gains and high-range close was disappointing for chart watchers and for newsmen. That keeps front-month SRW futures right in the middle of the relatively wide sideways trading range. September hard red winter wheat 5¾ cents lower, 440. September SRW slipped 3¼ to 529½. September spring wheat 2 cents higher, 513 even, Chip.
Yeah, you know, in that spring wheat market worked to the upside. And we've got some rains for the spring crop. The spring the spring wheat crop condition index is really pretty doggone good, right? It's better than the 5-year average. There's so much spreading going on in this market right now, and it's like we've talked about earlier this week. Wheat's just kind of being wheat.
Well, corn export sales in the weekend of July 23 featured a 2019-20 net sales cancellation of about 29,000 metric tons. No, Chip, it was not China.
No.
And these sales cancellations were likely just rolled to the new crop marketing year, which starts September 1. Canada, Mexico, Panama, El Salvador, all traditional importers of U.S. corn, all rolled purchases to new crop.
Okay.
New crop sales in the week were in line with trade expectations at 639,000 metric tons. The big news for corn, however, was the daily sales announcement of 1.937 million metric tons to China and 130,000 metric tons to unknown destinations, both for delivery in 2020 and 21. September corn futures were a quarter of a penny higher, 315¾. Deese corn firmed a half cent, 326¾. March corn closed at 338¼. Ooh, unchanged on the day.
I was just trying to figure out what the opposite of the corn conga is, because I could hear that coming out of your mouth as you were reading that. Yeah, just disappointing. Go sideways. Nowhere price direction today.
Old crop bean export sales in the report week of 258,000 metric tons were just short of trade expectations. New crop export sales, however, blew past trade expectations and hit an impressive 3.3 million metric tons. Germany topped the list of old crop bean buyers. For new crop, China's purchase of nearly 2 million metric tons easily topped the list of unknown destinations, accounting for more than 1.2 million tons. As with corn, buying interest in soybeans was scrubbed by what's considered to be a risk-free weather forecast. August soybean futures a quarter of a penny higher at 891 and three quarters. September beans from 2¼ cents to 886 and three quarters. November bean futures closed at 888 and a quarter. Hey, up 3 cents on the day.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so China was identified as a buyer of nearly 2 million tons of new crop beans. And then we got the unknown in for 1.2. And I'm going to say this. I haven't said it for a long time. In this case, I think you spell unknown destination, C-H-I-N-A. That's how it's really stacking up right now.
Old crop cotton export sales of nearly 119,000 running bales were supportive, but traders were disappointed by new crop sales of just 9,500 bales. Ooh, I don't have my cotton quotes in front of me. Yikes. Hold on. I'm pulling them up right now. Stand by.
Yeah, okay. All right. Okay. Or we could just go ahead and say that October cotton was 179 points higher at 62.82, and December cotton up 157 at 63.18.
I'm so excited. Beef export sales of nearly 29,500 metric tons for delivery this year were the highest of the year. August live cattle futures were 27.5 cents higher at 101.72.5. December cattle gained 50 cents to close at 110.45. August feeders 105 higher, 143.02.5. And on the snout side, pork sales of nearly 40,000 metric tons for delivery this year were led by China and Mexico. August hogs, $1.65 lower, 51.42.5. December hogs fell $1.25 to 49.77.5.
Wow. Love it. Let's bring in Oliver. Thank you, Davis. Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. Oliver, export demand doesn't matter.
It doesn't. I mean, generally you see low prices cure low prices. And in this you know, instance, we did it. We got the demand, but the reaction from the market was, I mean, it was the most disappointing thing I can recall in terms of seeing an export number like that. And I think that, you know, puts up a bit of a caution flag for the near term. The funds seem very determined to defend their short position. And the upside, as it stands right now, seems very limited. Now, I said this last week, that doesn't mean that, you know, I'm overly bearish looking for this thing to roll out of bed. I'm going to potentially go retest contract lows and maybe poke our toes just below there. But the overall sentiment in this corn market is getting to be so bearish that it's almost bullish. Once you get everyone leaning on one side of the market, you know, that's when you get those unexpected rallies. I'm not saying we're going to get that here in the next day or two, but I think if we go retest those corn or those contract lows, you're going to tend to psychological aspect even more so than it is right now.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. Take us over to the cattle complex. What do you like there?
Well, the cattle have been really strong. Fundamentally, I'm a little concerned that there's not going to be enough good news to really break us out above the top end of the range. We've just basically retraced the breakdown points from the end of February, beginning of March, which is when that COVID scare really started. We've gotten back to those breakdown points, and exports were good this morning, but I'm just a little conflicted here. The chart is very favorable, but I don't know that the fundamentals are there to support another breakout move.
Yeah, but at least the chart isn't attracting the sellers to that market right now. I think that's positive news. Oliver, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Aloha. Take care.
All right, that's Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. Coming up next, we're going to have a conversation with Sue Martin, Ag and Investment Services, right here on AgriTalk.
No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize Sanderson Farms for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Tell them you won't be in today. All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip, got Davis with me, and Yeah, kind of a disappointing market action today. Not a lot of reaction to what were some really impressive export sales data that came to us. All right, let's get to it. We've got a conversation with Sue Martin from Ag and Investment Services. Sue, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I am great. How about you, Chip?
We're doing okay. We're staying away from the coronavirus so far in my family. I feel pretty doggone good and fortunate about that. And otherwise, you know, we're just kind of watching these markets and looking for some inspiration, and it's getting harder and harder to find it, isn't it?
Well, it is. You know, you look at corn, and it's been in a pretty narrow summer range. And, of course, the trade is very focused on weather, and the weather continues to look a little bit more ideal. You've gone through pollination pretty much now as of today and for pretty much the whole grain belt. And so it's, you know, 90% of your yield comes out of pollination, and it's thought that everything went just fine. But we're not so sure about all of that yet. When we get down the road here, this year to us has patterned, we felt all along, it was following the year of 2010. Maybe you could throw 2015 in there a little bit. But 2010, ever since January, we have followed that pattern, which that year it made new lows. Up until we got into about the middle of July here, and then that pattern started to shift just a little. So we'll see what happens. But ironically, even that year, okay, let's go back. January, that year, the high or our high for January and for quite a while in the year was January 5th. This year is January 2nd. We put lows in on December corn. That year, it was on, I think, June 29th. This year, it was the 26th. You know, we've been following like 3 days ahead, many of the moves. But then, and that year, we put a high in on corn in July on the 15th. We did in 2015 as well. And, excuse me, and then we broke down and had probably one of our better breaks, put a low in on the 29th of June that year. But this year, we put a, you know, we started to break down. Yeah. And broke into the 15th, 12th, 15th, and then kind of have putzed around with a downward bias because why? Well, the crop ratings just kind of kept getting better and even surprisingly 3%, which is unusual for the third week of July.
Right, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So based on following the, that 2010 pattern, what would you suggest might be coming our way in August and into September?
Well, here's our take. We're seeing corn. Now, granted, it's hard not to look in your own backyard. But central Iowa, down through the heart, north and south, has been very dry. A lot of rains, especially north of Highway 30. A lot of rains have missed. And then you look at, of course, it's been the talk this week, west central Iowa, 58% of normal rainfall. Crops don't look so great. Then you go into, you look at nighttime temperatures, and oh, they haven't been too bad. There's been some nights here in July that we have seen temperatures 70 degrees or warmer with humidity.
Right.
Not a good thing for the crop. But yet, eyeballing the crop, it does look good. But I think it's turning a corner here, and it's losing some ground this week. I think we get into the USDA report, and the yield's going to go up. And and then from August into September, the yield starts back down.
Okay.
And what's interesting is if you look at the year of 2010, ironically, that year we had the exact same crop ratings we have this year for the same time.
Really?
Frame. Yeah. It was
you know, I didn't realize that. And that was a year in which we had some real sneaky issues come into that corn crop, and I think everybody was really surprised by the time we saw the combines roll, right?
Yes, it was. You had some humidity, temperatures at night, the yields just weren't there, and the yields dropped off from August into September, and I got again on into October. So it's kind of interesting because I always like to look at patterning of years of similar numbers, ending in similar numbers, in this case a zero. And 2010 was a year that popped off so similar to this year, and that's why I always thought we could see new crop corn make a low in June. But we're going to take a good look at that low. We might take it out. That low is on a trend line going back to 2008. And so we'll see what happens if we break that low out. Well, we could do that. But I'm still not ready to throw the towel in totally on corn. This may be a year that, at like 2010, that we catch, turn, and we start to move back up. And our highs for the year actually come in November. Now, you look at beans, they're a different year. Beans are following the year of 1980. And ironically, I went back and looked at crop ratings back then and yields. Yields in 1980, and see, beans were just a shock to see 3% increase. But the bean crop, you know, when we first started out, I thought corn looked better than beans. Now I think beans look better than corn. You know, so it's coming on. We're going into bean months. I always thought possibly we'd bring corn back up and have it look at the June close, which was 350. But unfortunately, we had beans deciding it was coming down to look at the June close. And today, that was 882. We got to 880 and a quarter, something like that. So meal kicked in, brought the beans back up. We closed firmer. But I think the crop conditions are good enough. Beans could see improvement again this next week or hold steady. Corn, I wonder if it won't be steady, maybe a little weaker. But it's going to be interesting because in the USD report, I think we'll see a yield increase in the beans as well. We might see another one in the September, and then all of a sudden it just trails off. The weather, of course, our weather sources that we use are out of South America. We have several we use, but the one that's been really clicking is out of South America and has predicted, back in January, they predicted we would see heat start coming in and building in March and then get warmer as we went through the spring, be very warm in June, and at least the first half of July, and then they kind of pushed it out through July. But as we got into the end of June, they started talking about a very cool down in August, by mid-August, and getting cooler and colder as we go through September, October, November, and December, with total opposite of NOAA. And talking about that we'll have lots of snow in November and December, possibly the very latter part of October. I hope not. Because it looks like they're starting to be right.
Well, with the struggles that we had in 2018 and in 2019 to get corn and soybeans out of the field, there ain't nobody out there, Sue, that wants to deal with another tough harvest.
No, there isn't. And one thing I think this year's crop has done with these ratings, it's a testament to on-time early planting. And this year went a lot easier than, you know, than the last two. But the kicker's going to be what really triggers this turnaround in ideas of how the yields maybe not getting better but going the other way is going to be the Eastern Corn Belt. It's going to be there that we see, has the yield actually done better, because we're thinking they're catching more of the humidity, more of the warmer nighttime temps, that type of thing. And therefore, the corn just isn't going to be as good as they really think it is. And of course, you know, China buying corn today, you know, just shy of 2 million metric tons. It's thought, you know, COFCO was behind that, representing several smaller companies in China. But, you know, COFCO's been kind of an interesting company. You know, they have COFCO International Grains out of Chicago. And, you know, in beans, up until, you know, it became that they were into phase one and had that agreement, all of a sudden, before that, the whole last year, you were seeing COFCO take all the beans, just about 90% or more. And a lot of people weren't watching it. It was so unusual for them to buy beans that way.
Yeah, definitely. And, boy, that number, I think there were a lot of people that watch the exports and understand how the export reporting system works that were looking at those new crop bean sale expectations topping out at like 2 million tons, something like that. And I think they understood very well that, boy, 2 million tons might be at the low end, not the high end of what those bean sales were going to be. But, Sue, I don't think anybody expected this thing to come in at 3.3 million tons on those new crop bean sales. That really kind of blew everybody away. We've talked a lot about the supply side of the market, Sue. When we come back, we've just started to scratch the surface on the demand side. I want to talk about that with Sue Martin from Ag and Investment Services. And we're going to talk hogs. I don't know if we're going to talk fundamentals in the hog market, but I know we're going to talk hogs with Sue Martin next on AgriTalk. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from pro farmers first thing today. And, you know, believe it or not, we are looking at one of the headlines that started from Reuters, and it says China needs explosive buying to meet U.S. farm import targets. Well, we're starting to see that. Is it going to continue? That's the question now. Prices continue to rise at Chinese corn auctions. China sold all of the 4 million metric tons of corn from its state reserves again. China also scooping up all of the cotton at its auctions. Bloomberg reports that China has amassed a $1 billion glut of U.S. cotton and doesn't need more. Southern water crisis in China, torrential rain still battering southern China there. The WTO to rule on U.S. request to hit China with $1.3 billion in Chinese goods. Go to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. You're listening to the new AgriTalk with Chip Flory and me, the handsome newsman, Davis Michelson.
Welcome back. Glad that you could join us today. I'm Chip. That's Davis. We're talking to Sue Martin.
Davis.
Before we get back to the conversation with Sue, let's go ahead and get a recap of how the market's closed.
Well, Chip, September hard red winter wheat, 5¾ cents lower, 440. September SRW slipped 3¼, 529.5. September corn futures were a quarter of a penny higher at 315¾. December corn firmed a half cent to 326¾. August soybeans a quarter of a penny higher, 891¾. Novi beans closed at 888¼, up 3 cents today. October cotton, $1.79 higher, 62.82. August live cattle futures were 27½ higher at 101.72½, and August feeders 105 higher, 143.02½, and August lean hog futures $1.65 lower, and why not, at 51.42½. That's your quick market recap, Chip.
All right. Good stuff.
Yeah, back to you. Hey, yeah.
Thank you. Sue Martin, Ag and Investment Services. Sue, you're generating some chatter out here on Twitter. This one comes from at Garrett Graham 007. It says Iowa soil can hold between 2.5 and 6.9 inches of moisture. If corn is currently using 0.3 inches per day and the reserve is gone in 15 days, if you use 4.75 as the state average, shouldn't there be places in Iowa running out of reserves in those brown spots on the drought monitor? I'll be honest with you, Sue. One of the reasons I wanted to get you on is because you are from that drier area in Iowa, but I made a couple of phone calls over to that area this morning, and guys are telling me that, yeah, you can see some stress showing up from the road. You get in the field and it still looks pretty darn good.
It does look good. I hear it everywhere. In fact, to be honest with you, I'm hearing it not only in Iowa and, of course, other areas that have got moisture. I hear the same comment by farmer after farmer. It can be in Ohio. It can be in Indiana. It can be in Illinois. Minnesota, of course, they're blessed. And South Dakota, Nebraska. Of course, Kansas is very blessed this year, too.
Yeah.
But and even parts of Missouri. But everybody says the same thing. Their corn looks great. And it probably will. My concern is this, and I don't hear a lot about tip back this year either.
Mm-hmm.
So that would all be sort of supply negative, but crop yield good. The only thing I'm thinking is that when we come down, push to shove as we move in, and of course the cooler temps in August is going to be good for beans. But I think what's going to happen is we may find that the eastern corn belt is where actually the silent problem really is, in that there was a lot of warmth at night with humidity, and that, unfortunately, the sugar didn't transfer into starch as nice as we'd like, and those kernels, which you can have an ear, maybe 38, 40 kernels long, but maybe
16 kernel rows around, but those shallow kernels is what you end up with when, you've described it perfectly, Sue. No question about it.
And I think it's going to be, last year it was the Eastern Corn Belt that really drove our prices well over $4 because they were having so much moisture and couldn't get the crops in. This year it might be that they drive us again, but because of the situation that the kernel depth is just there. Now, here where we're at, I think we were blessed with good subsoil, and that's gotten us through for quite a while. So, you know, maybe we'll get through it, but, boy, you're sure seeing a lot of stress out there.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, during the break, I think I figured out a way to summarize what your yield thoughts are going into the end of the year, or going into the August and then into the end of the year. Corn, the trendline yield is 178.5, soybeans 49.8 bushels per acre for the national average. For the August report, you're looking for the over on those numbers, but for the January annual production summary, you're anticipating that it's going to be under those trendline yields, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
You've got
very
me
good.
On target.
Okay. So with that in mind, this one's from NE Iowa Farmer. If we think we might have beans that need to be sold off the combine in October, are you pricing them now?
Well, we have been. We have priced some off of our service. We've made some recommendations. When we were up around that 912 area, 902, we were recommending doing some marketing. Okay. Still, I think there's something better coming on the soybeans, too. What's interesting is in the year of 2010, like I said, ultimately our highs for the year hit us in November. On the soybeans in the year of 1980, ultimately the high on beans was in November. So we had two different years ending in a zero, but both ending up the same way. The bean yields, I think, are similar to 1980. Here's how they kind of went. They got better in August. And then they turned around and they dropped down from August to September, but more so from September to October. I believe we dropped about 9/10 of a bushel from September to October, and from August to September that year, we dropped a half a bushel. And so I think there's going to be some surprise there. Beans aren't as tall either, leastways on our side of the Corn Belt. Mm-hmm. The beans just aren't as tall this year, but that's no fooler because you can pod closer together and you can have three, four beans in a pod. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked a little bit about the corn demand, but I want to talk some more about it. I know that you've got close contacts with the ethanol industry throughout the state of Iowa and throughout the Midwest. We are gearing it back. We're within 100,000 barrels basically of the high of the year, of the high water mark. So the recovery is coming along very nicely on the production side. Is it going to continue? Because, you know, that build in the stocks this week kind of made me pause and wonder about where we're going next.
Well, I have to agree with you. You know, it's all about this COVID situation. And I know that ethanol plants, from what I'm hearing, have had the ability to garner a fair amount of corn. Farmers may still have more yet to get rid of. And now that we're in towards the turn of the month to August, they now realize that they've made it through pollination. They're going to start to really move corn out of their bins and clean up and get ready because they're anticipating a large crop. So they're going to be having corn moved. Ethanol plants won't have to stress. Basis levels probably won't be that stellar. So I kind of think I am a little concerned about the ethanol industry. We've got to get past this COVID situation. Get the economy really starting to move. And, you know, our economy in the last quarter really didn't do as well as we would have liked. But I think we just got to get things up and rolling. And I don't know if there's back to normal type of a situation, but get us back to normal. And I'm afraid it's going to take us a little longer than just into the election.
Right. Okay. Let's talk hogs. Switch gears on everybody here. This we had pork export sales 40,000 metric tons announced today. China at the top of the list, but Mexico right behind it. Mexico is our traditional biggest buyer of pork. Now China is looking to take that spot. Where to next on hogs? And I don't know if that's a fair question or not, Sue, because we've still got such a backlog that we need to get through, don't we?
Well, we do, and yet, like today, Packers were looking for hogs. But weird. The one thing that just sort of blows me away is that in a year like this one, where we were euthanizing baby pigs, euthanizing market hogs, feeding market hogs less protein or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, so maintenance they would ration. Stable.
Yes. Yeah. You know, so like we're backing up the numbers. And yet our barrels and gilts, market-ready barrels and gilts from Canada was up 19.8%. It's just sort of like, really? You know, I felt so bad for our own producers. However, in looking at the October hog futures, and December's would probably be likewise, but looking at the October hog futures and looking at a monthly continuation chart of those hogs, going all the way back to 1971, we have a chart formation pattern happening right now that we have seen 9 other times. And every time, not that the past is any guarantee for the future, you know, there's my little disclaimer, but all of those other 9 times, whenever the market in price fell below the lower Bollinger Bands and closed below it or just traded below it, you didn't spend much time in months below. You started to come up and work your way around, and eventually you went right back up and started to test in towards the upper Bollinger Band. We are in number 10. And there were many times going all the way back to August of 71 that we even just touched the lower Bollinger Band and we started to turn. This time, it's like the other 9, we went below it. And your Bollinger Bands are spread so far apart. There's just no way I could bring myself to sell this market.
Gotcha.
And in the meantime, you have a 3-month moving average laying almost on top of that lower Bollinger Band. You go back and look at a 3 moving average, that if it's on top of it on the upside or on meets with it on the downside, you don't spend a lot of time there. Markets turn and give you good response, if nothing else, back to the
Excellent.
10 moving averages.
Excellent. Excellent. Good stuff, Sue. Thank you so much. It was good to talk with you again.
Good to talk to you, too, and glad that you are healthy.
You bet. You too. Back at you. All right. Thank you, Sue. That is Sue Martin, Ag and Investment. It's been a long time since we've had Sue on the show. I'm glad to get her back on here and talk about that supply side of the market. We've got some notes to go over during the break. We'll wrap it up next on AgriTalk.
When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Hey, welcome back.
Got no reason now for going home. All my reasons.
5-year-old Chip Flory, got Davis with me. We just wrapped up a conversation with Sue Martin.
Not as bad as feared, perhaps, in Western Iowa?
Well, you see, that's what I was just looking at, and I think it's important to get back to some of the thoughts that were tweeted at us from @GarrettGraham007. Mm-hmm. And what he meant when he was talking about those brown spots on the drought monitor, we're talking about severe drought over a fairly significant area of Western Iowa. It's right there in West Central Iowa. It doesn't make it all the way over to the river, but between Des Moines and the Missouri River, there is a mixture of moderate and severe drought. It basically two-thirds of the state now is looking at abnormally dry conditions. Northeast Iowa, where we're at, Davis, we're in good shape. Southeast Iowa, good shape. But there are spots in eastern Iowa, east central Iowa, south central Iowa, where we're looking at some problems. Northwest Iowa, of course, I can't forget to mention that specifically because there is some big corn country up there. And then it makes its way down into southwest Iowa, Crop District 7 in Iowa as well, kind of the northern edge of that Crop District 7 in Iowa. But shouldn't those brown spots in Iowa be running out of moisture? And mm-hmm. when we've talked with Mailman Mike, he sees it. He sees it out there. I've talked with some other producers out there, and they say, you know what, when you look at it from the road, you think to yourself, my gosh, if we don't get a rain within the next 72 hours, this thing's really going to turn around and go south. Another right. 24 hours goes by, and you think to yourself, it goes by without rain, and you think to yourself, my gosh, we got to get a rain within 72 hours or this is going to go south. Another 24 goes by without rain, and you're still thinking another 72. In other words, the resiliency of that crop, I think, is catching a lot of people's attention right
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be deceiving. I was surprised that Sue brought up 20. I shouldn't have been surprised. I'm happy that Sue brought up 2010 because 2010 was a deceiving year for corn yields across the country. Everybody felt really good about it, and then the bottom just fell out from underneath the thing. When we wrapped up with Crop Tour the third week of August, we were thinking everything's going to be just, you know, it's going to be okay. There right. are still some issues out there, but it's going to be okay. And we didn't get any more rain until the combines rolled, mm-hmm. and it was really pretty tough, like everywhere. So it can happen. Things can still go south with this corn crop. We cannot forget that. We cannot forget that. What else are we looking at on the drought monitor map that was updated here today? You know, I don't know why it did that, but my Siri just went off on my phone.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know what combination of words I said to make it do that, but there it was. Sue was talking about the Eastern Belt. It's mostly abnormally dry in Indiana, Ohio, but there is some moderate drought across Indiana, northern Indiana, and into scattered areas of Ohio. Let's go ahead and throw Michigan into that abnormally dry as well. So, yeah, those are the areas that we're going to be watching really closely. I think while the stress in western Iowa it has been mm-hmm. somewhat hidden by the subsoil moisture that we had going into the season. Okay. Maybe those milder nighttime temperatures and so on. I don't think that the stress is being hidden all that well or was hidden all that well over in Indiana and Ohio. And then you take a look at the radar today.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
if you're wondering why this corn market may have had a tough time pushing to the upside with the biggest one-day sale ever to China, look at the Eastern Belt getting covered up with some rain today. Some areas, it's going to be very light. I get that. Some areas are picking up some really good rains. But it was a bad day to get a big export sales announcement. That's the bottom line.
Yeah,
it was just a bad day for that. When dry areas are getting as much rain.
Yep. Yep.
So, yeah.
Hey, you know, I'm
All
not
right.
I'm not going to be around tomorrow. I'm taking a day off. Yes. Yes. Well, and see, this is my plan. Fortunately, I had a tooth go bad. Well, fortunately, unfortunately, I don't know. I got a stinker in there, but they were able to get me in at 8:30 tomorrow morning.
Okay.
So whatever happens,
well, you'll be good to go by 10.
Yeah. Well, the entire rest of the day, everything is looking up from the beginning.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It was a heck of a week, though. And I got to put in a shameless plug for my beloved landowner.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm pretty happy with this month's edition. And I did a little bit more editorializing than usual on the front page there. We were talking about land sales and how they're continuing through social distancing. I did transcribe chunks of our interview with Ed Elfman and his look at the banking industry, the ag lenders, and what kind of shape that they're in. But we've also got Q2 reports from a couple of Fed banks. We got the Dallas Federal Reserve and the KC Federal Reserve checking in. And boy, Ed was right on target. You know, he seemed to feel like banks were in pretty decent shape. And we've got some numbers that back that up. Illinois or Indiana Land Value Survey as well took a look at some very interesting results from June to June. This is all just a totally shameless plug for Landowner. I put so doggone much work into it. Mikey Walston is in there. He talked about Wisconsin land values and stuff, and I'm very excited about it, but I'm also very, very looking forward to a day off tomorrow, even if I do have to start it at the dentist.
Started at the dentist. Well, you know, if they start you off with some of that silly gas, might not be a bad day.
Yeah. Who knows? You know, you take a nap in the afternoon, you wake up, it's dark. Where'd that day go? I don't know.
Right. National Weather Service 6-10-day outlook, August 5th through the 9th, has got mostly below normal temperatures expected across the Corn Belt. Normal to above normal rains with those above normal rains in the Western Belt. If you have not gone to farmjournalfielddays.com to get registered for one, Field Days, two, Pro Farmer Crop Tour, and three, the Benefit Concert, which are all
free. Three rhymes with free.
Free.
No charge. No charge.
Get there. Get registered for it. We got the free for all coming your way tomorrow morning here on AgriTalk.